Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. With the Microsoft Inspire Conference just a few short weeks away, I asked Katie Quigley, Microsoft's Senior Director for Global Partner Marketing, to sit down and help our listeners better understand the role and mission of her organization, what's in store for partners attending Microsoft Inspire in Washington, D.C., July 9th through the 13th, and her personal and professional journey to Senior Director at Microsoft. You see, Katie and her team are part of a newly organized One Commercial Partner Organization, and she's responsible for all things partner globally and in support of an ecosystem of over 300,000 Microsoft partners. Her work includes recruiting and enabling channel partners, as well as helping partners connect and discover synergies in working together. We discuss topics as broad as what makes a great partner, the role of her team in the utilization of social tools like podcasts, and her role in reshaping what was once called the Worldwide Partner Conference into the Microsoft Inspire Conference. We had some challenges with the audio when we recorded this session, but because of the timing of Inspire, I didn't want our listeners to wait, but I hope the content far outweighs the quality of the audio. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you for listening. Katie, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Vince. I'm glad to be here.
I am so excited to have you join our podcast today to discuss the work that you do with our partners and the help engaging them across the organization and various communities like IAMCP, and also to talk about the Inspire Conference coming up in Washington, D.C., and what, 15,000 partners that'll be engaged in Washington, D.C. this year. And if we have time, I'm hoping we could dive into your personal and professional journey and how you got to be a senior leader at Microsoft. So thanks again for joining.
Thank you. Looking forward to the conversation.
I am as well. So first question out of the gate, can you explain to our listeners in simple terms what you do at Microsoft and how your team is organized?
Yes. So I work in the One Commercial Partner, which is all things partners for our channel. And my team's role is really to drive that partner-to-partner connection to ensure that the ecosystem is quite large. So how is it that we make it smaller? Have them help partners find each other to go to customers with joint solutions or at least learn from each other. And then bring awareness to what are the opportunities that partners have for their business that they can really continue to develop and grow their business and be more successful.
That's a broad area of responsibility. Does it seem overwhelming at times?
It does, but it really is about, at the end of the day, about making the partner successful. And so if you're doing something and it doesn't go to that, then you stop doing that and focus on the things that really do have an impact.
So what are some of the tools that you use? I noticed in your bio, the mention of social, and a lot of us are using social tools like Twitter today. What are some of the tools and methods that you use to engage?
Sure. So social is absolutely one of our favorite things because it's a great way to communicate with the partners as part of their digital day. Everyone uses social in some form or fashion, whether it's Twitter or LinkedIn or Facebook, whatever their favorite social media is. And so how is it that we can get that information to them? Facebook's a little bit more fun. You put in facts and figures and graphics, whereas Twitter is what are just some thought-provoking leadership things that we can put out there. And then now with LinkedIn being part of Microsoft, it's really exciting. We're looking at how is it that we can connect partners better that way. A few of the other things too that we've started podcasts such as this, and so that's a fun way to talk about leadership topics and have conversations that are easy to consume by partners. And then we do some broad paid media. We do SEM, SEO work in order to bring awareness to things that are going on at Microsoft.
And do you actually help partners engage with one another in a what we call partner-to-partner play?
We do. We just relaunched our Microsoft Partner Community, and it's microsoftpartnercommunity.com. So it's super simple. And it is a place for conversation. And it's a really simple way, and it's connected to our portal. It's a very simple way to go up and ask a question and have others, you know, start a conversation with you. If they're an expert there, they may have a resource that they can lead you to. So that's really important to us.
And how do you reach out there? Is that, again, through LinkedIn and Twitter and the like, once somebody's done a blog post or reached out on the portal?
Right. There's all different ways. And all of these things that we're putting out there, these conversations and blogs and social posts are all connected. So if you put something into our community, you can also post it to your LinkedIn profile. You can post it to Facebook. And vice versa, is that we can refer from our something like a Facebook post and send the conversation to the Microsoft Partner Community, making it as simple as possible.
So you started an event marketing at Microsoft. Can you take our audience through what that journey was like and how it led to your current role?
Sure. I, at my core, am an events person. I started doing events right out of college, and I love it because it really does, it can plays to this whole idea of what we're trying to do in our team now, is bring people together in a very connected, easy way and creating some amazing experiences along the way. And so I worked for nonprofits for about 10 years before Microsoft. And then when I joined Microsoft, it was to lead the event marketing team. And I absolutely loved it. There's been some amazing events we did. I started in the days when Bill Gates was still CEO. And so we did some incredible events that he was involved with, and large, small, all over the world. And it's given me the opportunity to meet so many customers and partners through the years.
You work quite a bit with partners. What do you think makes a great partner? What characteristics do you believe make a great partner?
Grit is, to me, the biggest indicator of success for a partner, given the landscape and all the changes that are going on in the industry right now. They have to be able to persevere these changes, to put their head down, understand what work needs to be done, and get to it. I also think what goes along with that is being adaptable, because things in a year from now could look very different than they do right now. And so it's, you know, as they're putting their head down, that they look up every once in a while and say, what's coming? What indicators do I see? And how do I adjust for that?
Are there some common myths partners have about working with Microsoft?
There are. There, you know, that we're hard to work with, that there isn't a person behind the name. And so that's part of what my team is trying to do, is make it feel more personable, and that that it's a personal connection that they can have with Microsoft employees, with each other. You know, it's an extremely large ecosystem. And because with that comes the complexities. And so how is it we can make it more simple for us to engage with our partners and for our partners just to figure things out with Microsoft?
So how do you make it more personal?
So we have a very large ecosystem. And so we've done a few things to feel more connected and be more connected with our partners. One of my favorite things that we have done and we continue to do is have this reactive interaction on social. And so we have a partner named Dux, and he's amazing. He's a CTO as well as a very strong marketer. And he is active on social and on Twitter. He posted, one time he posted about a book from Einstein and about the how to find success. And then a few weeks later, he posted about what was WPC and now Microsoft Inspire, and how he was winning an award. And he was so excited about it. So we put those two things together. We put a graphic together, a picture of him sitting next to Einstein next to the award, and said, if Einstein were still around, he'd think you were pretty great too. And surprised Dux. And what was really awesome is that he then put that out into his social channel. And I think he's got 10 or 11,000 people following him. And so it had this really broad impact, but it made it made him realize that we were watching and listening to our partners very carefully. And it wasn't something that we were just putting information out, but we were actually taking it in as well.
That's great. And I actually happen to know Dux from AvePoint. I follow him. He's got an amazing following and is just amazing on social as well. We're hoping to have him on the podcast at some point.
I think so. He's a CTO that's also a marketer, which is pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's awesome. Is there one thing that isn't taught, but you believe to be true in successfully partnering with Microsoft? One piece of advice you'd give our listeners, besides the grit piece, but what do you think is true that we don't teach?
That's a great question. I think that one of the things is that, again, going back to, it feels like this big, huge corporation that they can't engage with. And if a partner tries to reach out personally or asks a question even through our various communication channels, we are listening and watching and we will respond. And I think that there's a myth that it's just this big, huge, faceless company again, that we, but we are actively watching everything that our partners are saying. So I think it's the advice I would give is to reach out, because it's a little known fact that we actually respond.
No, in fact, I've had other partners on and they've discussed this same topic as well. And that there's a sense that Microsoft doesn't care. Microsoft doesn't listen, but in fact, that isn't the case. They do care. They just operate at a different pace and have a certain level of volume in the business that makes it appear that way.
Right. Yes, I agree.
What about a partner that failed working with Microsoft? Was there one thing you wished you had said to them to get them on the right path to success?
It potentially is that they weren't focused on the same goals or direction that the company is. And as you just said, the pace that the company operates at and the scale is that we have to be super clear and crisp on what is it that we do and what is it that we don't do. And so our focus is on something, for instance, this whole work around digital transformation and transforming companies and moving our customers to the cloud, that if it is something that doesn't play to that, it is going to be difficult to get to find success with a partnership with Microsoft. And so I think a partner needs to pay close attention to what are the things at the, Satya Nadella level, is what is he saying that matters, and then connect work to that.
I've heard that often referred to as shared vision, and that buying into the vision with the partner is so important to the success.
Right. I agree. And so it is very clearly stated now. I think Satya does a fantastic job of giving this vision out to the world about where Microsoft is going. And so if you listen to that, it will give you a lot of ideas about what direction to go in as a business.
So what is the most fun aspect of the job for you?
So the best part of my job is working with partners. I've been at Microsoft almost 15 years. My first 10 was working on the events team, the corporate events team. What I always loved every year was WPC, because of the interaction that I was able to have with partners. I saw their passion, their excitement about Microsoft, that they were all in. And to me, that was exciting. And so when the role opened up in the Worldwide Partner Group, which is now the one commercial partner, I raised my hand very high and said, I'm in, I want this. And really, it is. It makes my day. Luckily, I get to talk to partners a lot in this role, and they continue to energize me. I've been in this role for 5 years now, and I just absolutely love the interaction that I get to have with them.
Partners are fun.
Living in a whole different world, too. It gives you perspective. Being at Microsoft for such a long time, it's great. I just recently went with a partner to customer visits, and it's fascinating. It's great. It gave me a view and a perspective that I didn't have before.
Connecting with the mission.
Right. Yep. Exactly. Yes. Yep. And how we can help them more.
Yep. So what was the best piece of advice someone gave you when you took this role at Microsoft?
It was to learn as much as possible, ask a lot of questions of the partners about what the challenges are that they're facing. Don't make assumptions. And so that's really how we've modeled our whole team and how we decide on things that we talk about, our content, and our channels that we use, is listening to the partners. One of my very favorite, going back to, what's the best part about this job, is that for the 4 years that I was the business owner for WPC, we have a partner engagement board, which is about 50 partners that give us feedback and advice about the event itself. And we would be on calls once a month and then meet twice a year in person. And that is an incredible forum for building the conference. It really truly is built by partners. And so, and it was a way to increase the effectiveness of the event itself. And it really did. And it's amazing. And it's because we listen to our partners. And so that, I think that's the biggest piece of advice, is just keeping your ears open.
That's a great piece of advice. So fiscal year 18 is just a short time away. Do you anticipate any changes coming in how Microsoft goes to market with partners?
Well, the great thing is that we just recently went through reorganization to bring all of the partner groups into one organization. And so it's the one commercial partner. That will start to show up to partners about how we're much more connected and it's easier to work with us, that they don't have to work with multiple groups. And so our focus will be on those partners that are driving innovation through cloud solutions. And so if you have something that is going to change or disrupt a certain vertical or an industry, or is something that can scale quite a bit, that's where Microsoft and the partner can really go to a customer together to drive this solution forward. And so I think you'll start to see more of that.
So you're looking for those partners that can scale broadly. And I assume the cloud being such an important part of that. And is there something particularly you look for those types of partners in terms of your outreach?
I think that it's ones that can scale broadly, but they're very specific on what their solution is. They, you know, I think that the partners no longer have to know everything and do everything. And that goes back to that partner-to-partner connection, is that if they have a very strong solution that may fit, say, the healthcare vertical, and it can scale to other industries, or it can be something that they have the solution, but they don't have the support or the service behind that, that they can partner with another partner to bring it more broadly to customers in that vertical, or to transfer it over to another vertical such as retail or automotive or whatever it might be. So it's looking for those ideas and those solutions that really can have a bigger impact than just the one or two customers.
Yeah, that's the fun part of the job, right? That aspect of one plus one equals three or more.
Right, exactly.
So I'd love to shift gears here now, because we are getting ready for the big event, and we're in June, and Inspire is just a short time away. Yes. I know you don't have the direct responsibility for the event, but you are intimately involved in the execution. And wow, 567 sessions I counted when I went on the website. And certainly it's a 3-4 day event with a year's worth of planning. So just starting off, what can partners expect this year at the event?
So as you know, we've changed the name from the Worldwide Partner Conference to Microsoft Inspire. We did this for a few different reasons. One is that the partners do inspire us. Partners inspire our customers to make this digital transformation. So we thought this name and this word really fits about who they are and how they show up. And so we are doing everything we can to match the event to that word and to live up to the name Inspire. So you'll see in the keynotes, the energy and speakers talking about what's inspired them. We have a month-long competition going on for people to submit videos about who inspires them, what inspires them. We're doing things with Hour of Code to work, and we're bringing some students in to start to code and to really get a passion for that. And so you really feel that shift at the Worldwide Partner Conference to Microsoft Inspire. It's always been high energy, but now it's going to be even more so. And we're really focusing our content and the experience around it.
Nice. And what about the speakers this year?
The speakers are from both inside Microsoft as well as external. We always have a really great track of leadership speakers. And so they talk about leadership, sales, and marketing. And there's typically about 40 of them that are from outside of the company that are, you know, they're speakers as a profession quite often. They've written books. They're quite accomplished. And so those are great to go and hear from, because you just don't get that number of external speakers in one place. Main stage, we have some announcements about a few of those people. Obviously, Satya is going to lead off with the first day and talk about the vision and the work going forward for Microsoft. But then we have a few surprises built in along the way as well.
Nice. And I'm sure you can't share them with me now.
Right. You'll just have to go in.
I will be there. I can't wait. Yes. So how can partners best leverage the event? What advice do you have for them?
My advice is that they plan ahead. It's a very overwhelming week. Like you said, the number of sessions and the number of days, it is a lot that goes on during that time, both within formal content sessions, but also just the networking piece. And so we've got tools that you can use where you can go in and see who's attending. You can set up meetings ahead of time. You can plan your days. Each day may be different. Some days you may be attending more sessions, and other days it may be that you're having meetings all day that are one-to-one or one to few. But make sure you have a plan going in. My other advice is to leave a little bit of open space too. Don't plan everything because you want to have kind of those chance meetings. And that's why we design the event as we do. So you can go and sit, plug in your phone and hang out, and you end up sometimes having the best conversation possible with someone who's sitting next to you that you didn't know before. And so I would suggest not to book all of your time.
So what are the best places to hang out for those partners looking to do that?
The center of the event is in the Commons, and we have the Community Hub. And the Community Hub, you can go and charge your phone. You can have organic conversations. There's going to be TED-like talks going on there. And in the morning, we have a cappuccino bar, and then we turn it into a margarita bar around 3 or 4 in the afternoon. And so it's just a great place to spend time and have these chance encounters that could really make a difference in your business. One other thing that we have too is a LinkedIn area, given that LinkedIn is now part of Microsoft. And so you can go to this place called Rock Your Profile, and it's going to help you really build up who you are online and what your presence is and what your business presence is. And so make sure you check that out as well.
Nice. Rock Your Profile. I like that. I saw you post about women in technology, and I was going to ask you a little bit about that. What do you have planned this year?
We have quite a few things planned. We have our Women in Technology Lunch, which is on Wednesday of the event, which we have every year. And we have a series of speakers for that. And it's a really great event. There's about 400 to 500 women that typically attend it. It usually gets sold out. So I'm always so excited about that, just because it's a great chance to catch up with everyone. Then we are doing something new on Sunday. It's called Mentoring Circles. And so the idea of it is that we're going to have a panel discussion about what does mentoring mean? How is it that you engage in it? And then we're going to build some mentoring circles there, where if you're in person or you're you could even call in by Skype, and we're going to connect you in kind of a fun way, that these groups of women can continue to meet through the year. And so it's a good way to start the week on Sunday. So you can start to continue to connect through the week if you've met someone new.
Nice. And I know there's a networking tool, I think it's called My Inspire, that's available. Yeah. What advice would you give to the listeners looking to utilize that tool?
Sure. It's a very searchable tool. And so I would, going back to the plan ahead, I would suggest people go in, and if they're looking for a certain type of profile, you can do a search. If it's a geography or a business type or a business size, you can do all of those things to try and find people and reach out. You may reach out to 10 people and 5 of them are able to respond, but at least you've started new connections that you can then continue face-to-face. After. So definitely use it. And you can also schedule your content, what sessions am I going to and that sort of thing.
And we're going to provide some links in the show notes and for the blog post to our listeners. Is there any place in particular that they should go to learn more?
Yes. So on our partner portal, we do have the Microsoft Inspire site, and it's a key part of our partner portal. And that has all the information and all the links for the event itself.
Right. So as you know, I like to spend a little time here. I'm on the personal and professional journey. And I find that your story is fascinating in terms of how you've taken your career and moved it forward and now become a senior leader at Microsoft. So I thought maybe we would spend a little time here, and hoping you can share with our listeners a little bit about that.
Yes, definitely.
So how did you get started? Talk our listeners through it.
So I got started prior to Microsoft. I got started in the events business. And I just thought that was after graduating from college, I thought that was a really interesting field. It wasn't that well known at that time, but I got engaged, started at a company kind of ground up. But then moved to DC because I wanted to live someplace different. I was, like I said, a Seattle native, and I just needed to experience something different. So I had one person that I knew in DC who she connected to me to an open job, which I interviewed for and got. I worked for several professional organizations in Washington, DC, doing their event and marketing work. And so it ranged from financial professionals, so corporate treasurers and CFOs, to the National School Boards Association. And then my favorite was the American Association of Airport Executives. They're the people that run the airports, which is fascinating business.
That must have been fascinating.
Yeah. And then someone knew of a job opening here at Microsoft to run the event marketing team for the corporate events team and connected me to who would then be my general manager. And it was a long shot to get the job because I had no technology background. But the person that hired me believed that I could make that transition. I literally had people betting on how long I'd last at Microsoft, given the culture shock. And I think 2 years was the longest. Oh. And, you know, 14 years later, I'm still at Microsoft. So I won the bet that I didn't even know about. And so through almost 10 years, I ran that event marketing team. And it was everything from CXO level events all the way up to our largest branded conferences, internal and external. And I absolutely loved it. Like I said, I got to see every part of the business across Microsoft, traveled all around the world to lead this event execution. And it was just fascinating to me. I got to, you know, have a front row seat to hearing Bill Gates speak. And that's just something that you don't forget.
Yep.
So an amazing experience. But I was at the point where I wanted broader marketing, and I loved the partners from the interactions I had. And so when the job here opened up, I raised my hand and jumped at the chance.
What do you think you're good at, and why does it help you in your role?
One of the things that is something that I'm passionate about is connecting unusual intersections. And so there's a book that struck me that I read a long time ago by Franz Johansson, and it's called The Medici Effect. And it's about recognizing random things or experiences and connecting them together to create something even better. And one of my favorite examples is a friend of mine that was responsible for the American Hardware Show. It's a trade show that was just massive and it was starting to die. And it doesn't sound very exciting. I think you have hammers and screwdrivers and that sort of thing. It's not very fun. And so what he did, instead of looking at other trade shows to say, what can I do to help give this some energy back, is that he went outside into the world and he found at American Girl a very unusual connection. When you go to the American Girl store, you walk through and it's an experience. It's immersive. It has, from start to finish, you really feel like you have entered into this other reality. And you feel like everywhere you turn, every detail has been taken care of. So he looked at that journey that you take through the American Girl store and applied it to the American Hardware store and really created this journey and this immersive experience. And it changed the American Hardware Show. And it started to take off and grow again. It's pretty cool to see how you can make these unusual connections.
So how do you take and apply that at Microsoft? What are some of the things you do there?
So WPC, there was a clear opportunity for us that it was missing an opportunity for partners to have a place to hang out, to feel comfortable, feel like it was in their natural environment. Instead, they're in this big, large, cold cement expo hall with not a lot of branding, not a lot of creature comforts to it. And so we, in a similar way to look for unusual intersections, we thought, what can we do to make it different? So I was in New York, and there's this place that to me is just one of my favorite places in New York City, and it's called the High Line. And they took these old train tracks, and they were not touched, not used. It was space in New York that just wasn't even desirable to go to. And they turned into this beautiful walkway that goes on for about a mile and a half or 2 miles that's park-like with benches, and there's stops you can make for coffee. And it's a really great place to go and engage with others and go for a walk and relax. And so we thought, let's do that, bring that into an expo hall, because it'll give an opportunity for partners to have a different environment that's more relaxing and not as stressful as a large convention center. And so we called it the Low Line. We literally had grass and trees and park benches and places for coffee along the way. And what I loved is seeing people just hang out and sat there. Before, people would run out of the expo hall when they were done. And this, when we implemented this, people were just spending their time sitting and talking to each other. It was fun.
No, that's great. In fact, this is going to be my 10th Inspire. And I've noticed a real change from my first one, which I believe was in Houston back in 2008. To the progression now. And I agree, there's a lot more for there are more places for partners to connect. There's more identity around those spaces and helping organizations to connect. Really great. So what advice would you give to someone you were mentoring that wished to work at Microsoft or was in your organization?
I actually mentor about 7 or 8 people just because I have such a strong passion about mentoring.
Wow.
Because so many people helped me as I was starting out my career. And it is to pursue those things that they love. And I know that it's easier said than done. But if you find an audience, if you find an area of responsibility that you have this strong passion for, it does make it easier. You know, being at Microsoft or being at, I think, in the technology industry today is hard. Just the pace is quick. There's a lot to be done. And so if it is something that is really compelling to you, that you have this strong passion for, you're going to be able to get through all of the other stuff. Because the other stuff is going to happen. You know, there's always going to be this overhead and these hard things that you have to do. But you really believe at your core that and it aligns with your values and your interests, you'll do a lot better.
That's great advice. What were some hurdles you faced and how did you overcome them?
One of my first hurdles was when I was switching from going from being an event leader to broad marketing was that this idea that events was something that sat alone and wasn't part of the broader marketing spectrum. And so making that career shift was somewhat difficult, but one that I felt really strongly about wanting to do. And so I've done that a few times. When I moved from associations to corporate, again, it wasn't the obvious path. People didn't think that I would be able to do it. But I think you just kind of have to persevere. Sometimes you have to take a few steps back to, ultimately move further ahead. And that's what I did both times, actually.
Were there any lessons learned that you could share with our listeners?
I think that it is never too late just to make that switch, and that you can continue to grow your career even if you feel like you're well embedded and you're an expert in one area and it's super comfortable. I would suggest people make themselves uncomfortable and try things that are a little bit out of the ordinary as far as career steps, because it all ends up fitting together and it makes you a stronger employee, a more well-rounded person if you have different experiences. That then, kind of going back to my comments around finding unusual intersections, if you have unique experiences that you can then connect together, it will make you more valuable, I think, in the role that you are in, and just more interesting too for the experiences that you get to gain.
So who is one of your role models and what advice or attributes did you learn from them?
So one of my role models is Gabriella Schuster, who's my corporate vice president. And it's because she has experienced so many different roles at Microsoft that she thoroughly understands the business. She is just able to speak at such depth about the Microsoft business broadly. And I've seen her in meetings where I'm amazed about how she can respond and she can answer. And she does it in a way that is collaborative and open. That I think she's a great role model that I get to be around, quite often because of where she sits.
Was there any particular advice that she's given you?
It's to, I think her ongoing advice is to ask questions and ask for clarity and to never assume if you don't quite understand something, and it's okay to ask.
Great. So, is there a quote you live your life by or think of often?
There is one. I'm going to get it wrong because I always get these things wrong, but it's Eleanor Roosevelt, and it's do something every day that makes you a little bit scared.
Do something every day that makes you a little bit scared by Eleanor Roosevelt.
Right.
Okay. We're going to put that in the
yes.
show notes. That's a great one. So what advice would you give your 25-year-old self?
It would be to take more risks. I think that I probably held off making changes sooner because of concerns about that. And I have had for the last 3 years, I've had a hire out of MBA school, which is amazing, I think, that I've had that opportunity because I've seen how confident they are and how they make decisions that are risky. And I'm so happy to see that because that's what I would have told myself to do more often.
And what pursuits or obsessions do you explore when you're not working?
I'm kind of a health nut. I go to the gym every day at 5 a.m. And so it's a pretty regular thing for me. I'm actually going to be in a race, a trail race, that goes about 17 miles in the summer in the mountains. So that should be interesting.
Nice.
I like doing that. I have two boys that play sports, and I'm a big sports fan anyway. So I love going to their sports and watching them. And then all of us, we in our family love to travel. So that's another thing. Any chance I can go see someplace new, I will.
That's great. And is there a particular workout you do when you go to the gym at 5 a.m.?
I do all sorts of things. I do a mix, and so it doesn't get boring. TRX is one of my favorite things. It was invented by some Navy SEALs, but it's about using your body for strength and so forth. So it's doing that to me is actually relaxing.
Yeah, so those are the TRX straps. I've used them at the gym as well, right? So they're like loops and straps and
exactly.
Things like that.
Exactly, yep. Bright yellow. Yeah, I like doing that.
So this is an incredibly busy time of year. Do you still find that you're able to get to the gym every day and continue your pursuits?
I am, because there's just no excuse to not go at 5 a.m. There's fortunately not a lot going on at 5 a.m., so that's a great time. It actually helps me plan my day and think about what's coming and gets rid of stress. I think I'm a much easier person because of it.
Yeah. How do you think about work-life balance, especially at a time like this, but with all those things you like to pursue, two teenage boys, and just what I'm sure is a very demanding role?
Right. I actually had someone on my team that came up with, instead of saying work-life balance, he said a balanced life works. And I absolutely love that, because it is about every day is going to be different, and you're not always going to have the exact balance you want. Some days it's going to be all about work, and other days it's going to be all about fun. But if you mix the two together and overall you have that balance, it's going to all work out.
I like that. A balanced life works.
Isn't that great?
Okay, we're going to make sure.
I can't take credit for it. Yeah, it was like brilliant, that. I think.
I think it is as well. We're going to put that in the show notes too. And is there you mentioned a book earlier, but is there one book that you have read that you'd recommend to our audience?
Well, the book that I mentioned is The Medici Effect, so I'd absolutely recommend that. There is another book. I am a natural introvert, and so there's a book called Quiet, and I forget the author. Her name is Susan. I forget her last name, but it's called Quiet, and it's about how you can be a leader and have an impact, but don't have to be the loudest person in the room and don't have to change who you are to do so.
Nice. We'll look that one up and we'll put that in the show notes as well. Quiet.
Quiet, and yeah.
The Medici Effect as well.
Right.
And I think you mentioned the author's name earlier.
Franz Johansson is the author.
Franz Johansson. Yeah, that's great. So if you had a personal billboard in Seattle or Redmond, you're in Redmond in Building 121. So if you had your own personal billboard, what would you share on it?
That is a really hard question.
I do that on purpose.
I think it would be, and maybe it's another quote, but it's words to live by to me, is always assume best intent. And it's a good reminder to me. It's a good reminder, I think, to everyone. And I think that with that, people would be a little bit kinder, a little bit more thoughtful. And so I think I would put that up there, and it would be a good reminder every day when people drive by it. Assume best intent.
I like that one quite a bit, actually. That's a great quote as well. So I love that as a billboard. Yeah. This is great. Katie, I so appreciate you taking time, such a busy time of year for you and for the team. Is there any last comments or things you would like to say to our listeners, our audience of partners that are out there? And we also get some Microsoft people that listen to this. You know, especially with partner conference coming up, anything you'd like to share?
No, I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you, Vince, very much. The thing maybe I would say is that to continue to innovate, to look for opportunities that may be gaps in anyone providing a solution to, and that's where I think success will be found.
That's great. Thank you so much, Katie. So great to have you on the podcast. And I look forward to seeing you at Inspire and hopefully connecting with you and networking with some of our friends and partners there.
Yes, I'm looking forward to being in Washington, D.C. in just a short month and a half. Thank you.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione. Online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on The Ultimate Guide to Partnering.